debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Boy, there's a lot that we're going to get to today. The hearings, Judge Amy Coney Barrett to be on the Supreme Court. The woman who is occupying a stolen seat on the Seventh Circuit, President Obama had nominated a brilliant African-American lawyer for that seat. And Mitch McConnell, for 2 years, refused to allow any of President Obama's judicial nominees to go through, which is why there was over 100 of them open when Trump came into office. So Mitch McConnell stole that seat, and then he gave it to Amy Coney Barrett so that she could be teed up. She was just a lawyer before this, a lawyer who worked on Bush v. Gore at that, so that she could be teed up to knock this one out. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. I mean, the whole point of judicial independence was a way of avoiding the so-called tyranny of the majority, what sometimes is referred to as mob rule, the idea that, you know, the majority is not always right. It's a point that I think can be argued and can be argued effectively. In fact, Rutger Bregman in his book Humankind, I think, argues very effectively against that. But nonetheless, the idea was to keep the judiciary separate from the branches that are responsive to the people in order to be able to presumably uphold the constitutional protections that we're supposed to have as members of the United States. 1789 actually was the year that 1787 was the year the Constitution was written. 1789 was the year it was ratified and we officially became a republic. And in 1789, abortions were advertised in the newspaper. They didn't use the word abortion, but everybody knew what it was, and they were advertised in the newspaper. The word privacy meant use the toilet, thus privies. Thus, you don't find that word in the Constitution, but the Fourth Amendment is all about it. But, you know, Scalia would tell you that that word isn't there. In fact, did tell you that. Guns were rare. They were very expensive. And most cities heavily regulated guns. You know, 100 years later, it was still the case. Tombstone, Arizona, you know, you had to leave your gun with a sheriff when you came into town, famously, you know. So, you know, when this country was founded, and slavery was legal. So when this country was founded, things were very different than they are today. And any judge who tells you that they are an originalist and therefore they are reading the Constitution through the mind or eyes of either the people who wrote it, who had wild disagreements about its meaning, or through the eyes of, as Amy Coney Barrett said the other day, the people at the time, the general understanding of the time, anybody who tells you that is trying to feed you a load of horse crap. I mean, you know, there's just no other way to say it. This is like a religion. It's like priests saying, well, we know what God says and we know how to correctly interpret the Bible. And what's happened is that the Supreme Court has seized so much power for itself and has gotten so bizarre over the last couple of decades that they've had to resort to using religion, not any official religion, the religion of the court, to say, oh yeah, we're doing the same thing that priests do. We can divine the mind of God, and we can read the old sacred texts, in this case the Constitution, and tell you exactly what they mean. It's a scam. Originalism is a scam, period, full stop. Raven in Medford, Oregon. Hey, Raven, what's up?
The people involved who never spoke about religion are brought up her religion, even though the Republicans keep trying to make it like it's reverse bias. I've worked in mental health for a number of years, and what everyone should be questioning is not her being Catholic, but the fact that she was in the people of praise for so long as a child, and then married a husband to that. From my experience as a person who worked in mental health and has a degree in clinical psychology, that is very hard to break. Sometimes people don't even break that during their lifetime as an adult. And most of their decisions are influenced by that. That's what really people, what we should be questioning, is how much is she really still involved with the people of praise? And even now when she's going for the hearings, are we listening to them and her head or to her? Because what happens in cases involving mental health is that you will see one particular, and usually is the narcissist and such, that managed to have an influence over other individuals that suffer from some form of emotional instability or mental health, because they appear much like the people who had control over them when they were younger in life, which is why you often see kids going back to abusive parents and spouses going back to abusive spouses. So that's really what should be the question here. It is not her Catholicism, yep, but how much is she really influenced by that particular group still, which is a group that has its entire religiosity attached to white male supremacy and manifest destiny, where they do not look at others as human beings. Oftentimes, and I myself believe in God, have Christian beliefs, but I'm very aware that there are Christian groups who do not look at people of color, gays, lesbians, or those who are not from the United States or of a different religion as less than.
Yeah. Raven, I would add the one word you're not using here is the word cult. Everything that I can read about people of praise suggests that it's a cult. I'm curious your thoughts on that as a licensed, trained mental health professional.
It is a cult, and that's part of the problem, because what happens is that you have a lot of your inner self ripped out. Like when I was in the Navy going for boot camp, you hear the thing of, well, we're going to tear you down to rebuild you in our image.
Right. And that's what cults do.
That's what cults do. Unlike the military, however, who expects you to get out and be a functional adult when you're done with boot camp, whether you're in service or not, cults do not look at things that way. It's really, we're going to tear out as much of you as possible and rebuild you with as much of us as possible. And hopefully that process will last a lifetime, even if you're not aware of
there,
it.
There is no doubt in my mind, Raven, that if the tables were turned, if a Democratic president had put forward a nominee who was a member, a lifelong member, and had married into a 1,700 person cult, regardless of the church, the Republicans would be all over that. Raven, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
But Democrats are so nice. Phil in Dixon, Illinois. It says here you want to disagree with me. What's up?
Not with you, but with the caller you had. He did a great disservice to the People of Praise community. They are not a cult. They were founded in 1971 in Notre Dame, Indiana. It's ecumenical, which means they're not only Catholics. There's Lutherans, Episcopalians, Methodists, Pentecostals, Presbyterians, non-denominational and other denominational Christians that belong to them. They pray together, they work together, they share things, they reach out to the communities, help the poor, move into neighborhoods that need, what should I say, that need some building up and need people to help them and so on. They are not a cult.
And they teach that men should be the heads of the family and women are handmaids.
No, no, that is not true.
Yes, 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 they do. It's in their literature.
Oh, it is. Well,
It explicitly
but they are not
is.
A cult. The okay. ones who are right. really
we have different
today.
Definitions of cult, Phil, but you know, I get your point. And there's a lot of small groups that are just fine and you know all well. My point was that if the Democrats had put forward a candidate who is a member of a, let's not use the word cult, a small religious group of 1,700 people that have very, very strong religious views that argue that men should have dominion over women, that women should be called handmaids. And in People of Praise, they literally called women handmaids up until Margaret Atwood's movies became so popular. And men were referred to as heads. And the head and the handmaid, as in head and hand, right? Like from Jefferson's old letters. Actually, that was head and heart. But anyway, but if Democrats had put forward a candidate who was a member of a group like this, the Republicans would be screaming cult. That was my point. Liz in Los Angeles. Hey, Liz, what's up?
We live in a very diversified country politically, but religiously and ethnically. And it seems to me totally inappropriate to have another Opus Dei member. This Opus Dei is a secret society within the Catholic religion. And I understand the current nominee is a member of that group. And we
How do
already
you know
have,
that, Liz? I have not seen that reported anywhere.
I heard it, and I heard on KPFK.
She is a member of People of Praise, which is this little Catholic cult with 1,700 members. Are you sure you're not mixing them up?
No. And in addition, I heard it was also Opus Dei. But we have four other justices that are members of that. And they're all Catholic. Right. And they're all picked out by this man, Leonard Leo. Who is this man? And why is he picking official officers? And we should have...
He's also a right-wing Catholic.
Yeah. Well, I assume that's
And he runs the Federalist Society, which has funneled all these, every single one of the judges. You know, Donald Trump has now appointed, if she passes, a third of the Supreme Court and a quarter of all federal judges have come out of Trump, which means 100% of them came out of the Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society.
And that's totally inappropriate. That is not a reflection of our population and our people. And besides, I'm a Lutheran. Yeah. You know what Lutherans are.
Well, there's no Lutherans on the court. In fact, there's no Protestants at all on the court, to the best of my knowledge. So this is the situation. Liz, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. And, you know, again, on Opus Dei with Amy Byer, I just don't know. Deborah in Columbia, Tennessee. Hey, Deborah, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I have been thinking about this for a while. There are many churches and the evangelical churches that are so immersed in our politics right now. I understand that they're even behind some of the appointed judges that have been pushed through by Mitch McConnell. So the separation of church and state that makes them taxes exempt is no longer being adhered to. So why is no one talking about taking their tax exempt status away?
Well, I've been talking about it for years, Deborah, and I completely agree with you. This started in a big way during the administration of George W. Bush, who had been the evangelical outreach director for his father's campaign in 1988. That was when a strong coalition between the hardcore right-wing Protestant churches and the Republican Party got built. It was during the last years of the Reagan administration, the early years of the Bush administration, and George W. Bush was the guy who was the tip of the spear on that. And then throughout the George W. Bush administration, you had televangelists, you had these religious broadcasting people all over the country, you had preachers in the pulpit, you even had Catholic priests talking politics in the pulpit and basically defying the Internal Revenue Service and Congress and the Department of Justice, saying, we're going to break the law, screw you. And they have continued to break the law. They're continuing to break the law today. And we are subsidizing them with our tax dollars. I've been saying forever that the only religious institutions, in my opinion, that should be tax exempt are monasteries because they have no way of supporting themselves. But, you know, churches, televangelists, the whole, you know, Pat Robertson became a billionaire with a B, a billionaire through this. I mean, it's just crazy. So spot on. I'm totally on your side. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
I don't know if you know about this, but I was reading up on the white evangelical vote, and apparently it seems to be diminishing. It's around 20% of the total vote for like over 50 to 65, and under 30, it's 8% of the vote. So it looks like in the coming years, the evangelicals, as a one of the two main things that props up the Republican Party, corporations and the evangelicals, are going to be disappearing.
I think we're seeing the tail end of this, Bill. It's the echo of, you know, it started with Billy Graham in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and then we got to, you know, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker and Jimmy Swaggart and all these televangelists who became multi-millionaires. Pat Robertson became a billionaire selling this stuff. This you know, white Protestant evangelical you know, form of religion. And now they've been so discredited. Now you got Jerry Falwell Jr., you know, getting in trouble, you know, sexually and stuff, and Billy Graham's son, you know, involved in all these scandals. I think it's dying out, just like I think white supremacy is dying out in this country. I think there's a new generation coming up.
Right. That means the remaining thing for us to take care of is Citizens United. Once that's dealt with, they're not going to have much to prop themselves up with.
Yeah, I'm with you. And last night on TV, I saw an ad on, I think it was MSNBC, that was for End Citizens United, a group called End Citizens United. The ad was only peripheral to that, which surprised me. Uh-huh. But, you know, there are active groups out pointing out how toxic it is. Spot on. Damon in Denver. Hey, Damon, what's up?
You made the point about Amy Coney Barrett. About this theory, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments not being...
Legitimate is the word she used, yeah.
Legitimate, yes. Okay, and I listened to a lot of her testimony yesterday and the day before yesterday. I certainly heard a lot which was disturbing, but I didn't hear any Democrats raise that with her. And I'm wondering...
Yeah, nobody brought it up, which surprised me.
Wow. Yeah. I certainly would have liked to have heard what she had to say if someone had posed the question to her.
I would, too. I absolutely would, too, Damon. I mean, there were a lot of questions. In some ways, some of the Democrats, anyway, missed an opportunity to talk about the Democratic platform and what's going on. I mean, this nomination is something that they're not going to be able to stop, so they could have used that time to do pretty much anything they wanted. And I think they should have been making a pitch for vote for Democrats right now, particularly, you know, like Jamie Harrison, you know, against Lindsey Graham. But, you know, it is what it is. David in Spotswood, New Jersey, you're on the air.
I haven't watched that much of the Supreme Court nomination, but what little I do is I hear the words legal process, or I don't have the information to answer the question. And what I wanted to suggest to the congressman or anybody out there that's listening is I think any time that the word's legal, that I can't answer the question because I would need to know the legal facts, is that there should be an immediate two-week meeting of the Judiciary Committee to determine if the nominee should answer the question. But then by doing so, we could stall this nomination until February.
Yeah. It's number one, the rules are in the hands of the Republicans right now. They control a majority in the Senate, and so they get to decide what the rules are. Number two, I don't think that, you know, outside of criminal procedures or maybe, well, even with a subpoena, you remember all those mob bosses back, you know, in the 50s and 60s that were saying, you know, I'm exercising my First Amendment right. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett does not have to answer any questions she doesn't want to answer. I don't think you can force her to.
Well, I'm just saying then maybe she should be disqualified when she uses the word that I would need to know what the legal process.
I think a lot of her answers were disqualifying yesterday. I'm with you. And I'm guessing that there's not going to be a single. And David, thank you for the call. I'm guessing there's not going to be a single Democrat voting for her because she was deceptive. She was evasive. And some of the things she did say were downright scary. So, you know, there's a lot going on there that we need to be talking about.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Barb in Deerfield, Wisconsin. Hey, Barb, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I know that you are very knowledgeable about the Citizens United case, and I'd very much like to hear your reaction to disgusting diatribe by Ted Cruz, full of Republican propaganda, and in particular, his explanation of Citizens United. Would you please tell us what this really was and its consequences?
I have to confess, Barb, I did not hear Ted Cruz, or if I did, I wasn't paying careful attention to his rant about Citizens United. Do you want to illuminate me? I mean, I can tell you, I've read both the case and the dissents and have written about it extensively. But specifically, what are the points that you would like to hear rebutted or responded to?
It's what he didn't say. He just said, you want to know what Citizens United is? Everybody's talking about it. Well, all it was Democrats didn't want a critical video made of Hillary Clinton, so they didn't want any freedom of speech.
Oh, yeah, I did catch part of that.
Books. That's all he basically
right.
said.
Right. He said they want to ban books
and
they want to ban movies.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And books.
He okay,
books
just a quick recap. The Citizens United was an anti-Hillary Clinton AstroTurf organization that had put together a movie, an hour-long or 90-minute-long movie about Hillary Clinton. I think it was called The Truth About Hillary. And it was basically trashing Hillary Clinton. There was an election law in the books that said within, as I recall, 90 days of an election, anything like that that is specifically, you know, obviously partisan would be considered a campaign contribution. And therefore, if Citizens United was spending money promoting this movie, that would have to be considered a campaign contribution to the... This was in 2010, so this would have been the 2008 election. So this was Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama back then. This is when they expected that Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee. In any case, it would have had to be considered a campaign contribution. In response to that, basically, the Supreme Court blew up a whole bunch of those laws that were passed after in the Gerry Ford administration and the Jimmy Carter administration following the Nixon bribery scandals. And they did it with this very bizarre, twisted logic. They said that basically the reason why it's inappropriate to restrain the speech of corporations, in this case a nonprofit corporation, but a corporation nonetheless, the reason why it's inappropriate to restrain their speech is because corporations are the most well-informed actors, their phrase, their word, in the economic sphere. And by telling them that they cannot, you know, inflict their political opinions on us, we are depriving ourselves of hearing what they have to say. So it wasn't actually so much, it was argued as free speech, but it wasn't like, you know, the corporations have a right to free speech, although that's already been established. That was back in 1976 in the Buckley case. But rather it was, you have a right to listen. And your right to listen to corporations is impaired if the corporations are forbidden from doing this. And, you know, Ted Cruz is just pathetic. I mean, you know, he tries to twist things around and all this kind of stuff. It's just bizarre. I strongly encourage, Barb, you and anybody else who's listening, you can very easily Google Justice Stevens's dissent in the Citizens United case. It was joined by Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Breyer, and I'm not sure who else was on the court at that point in time in 2009, 2010. That dissent is, it's not long. It runs a couple pages, and it summarizes the case and points out the stupidity of the way that it was decided, that this was just a naked power grab by giant corporations and right-wing billionaires. It's really worth reading.
Thank you for explaining to America the truth. I knew you would.
Good talking to you. Mark in Sauk City, Wisconsin. Hey, Mark, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's on your mind today?
As I pointed out before, that I get a kick out of these. They call themselves the Federalist Society, but they have nothing to do with, you know, the Federalists who were there at the founding. Judge Amy claims to be a originalist, and I would point out to her, well, if you want to get the original thoughts, you could turn to the Federalist Papers and get a lot of insights into what they thought from them. And additionally, that if she's such an originalist, I'd point out to her again that, and I've mentioned before, that in Federalist 81, Hamilton says there's not a syllable in the Constitution that says the Supreme Court gets to decide the constitutionality of laws. I mean, that he says indeed that laws should be constructed according to the Constitution.
I wish that one of these members of Congress, and frankly, it could be either party, one of these senators, would ask the question, Article 3, Section 2 says that the Supreme Court shall operate under regulations defined by Congress and within the realm of exceptions defined by Congress. Is it your opinion, Judge Barrett, that Congress should be able to pass a law and include a provision in that law that this law may not be reviewed by the Supreme Court? Somebody should, this is called court stripping, and somebody should confront this issue head on. I realize it would cause a small nuclear explosion in Washington, D.C. I think it's time for it. Back to you, Mark.
I agree with you there because, I'd ask her direct questions. Do you believe in the Emoluments Clause? Do you believe that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution is valid? Yes or no? Don't let her say, well, that's something that arguments for all that kind of thing. That because the 13th, 14th, 15th, and I'll add the 16th Amendment there, are cores to, the 16th, of course, is taxation, which the Federal Society hates, undoubtedly. But, I mean, those three amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, ensure the rights of citizenship to people born here, ensure the rights, of people not to be enslaved anymore. And just ask her directly, do you believe slavery should be legal again? I mean, if you don't believe in those amendments...
Well, I'd like to go after the question. You know, she has on two different occasions used the phrase possibly illegitimate 14th Amendment. What does that mean? Are you saying this the way that Southern politicians have been saying it since the 1870s, that these three amendments that basically ended slavery in the United States, that these are illegitimate because Confederate states were not impaneled. They were not part of the House and Senate. The senators and members of Congress from those states were not available to vote on them back in, you know, during the Reconstruction era. Is that why it's illegitimate, or do you have some specific other constitutional argument against it? I mean, she has written this twice, and I've not heard anybody bring it up.
And I've actually called Amy Klobuchar's office and encouraged her to answer that, ask that question, even though I don't live in her district, because she's on the committee. I mean, that you have to confront her with that, because it is something so outside of mainstream thought. Because as far as, you know, the South being brought back into the Union, the North was far more forgiving of the rebellion than traditionally has been throughout history, has been, you know, that has been afforded to people who led rebellions. I mean, that typically they did not fare well when they were defeated. I mean, that...
Right, in the United States or anywhere else.
In the United States.
And this was... Yeah. Right, this was, again, you know, Lincoln's big thing is, let's heal this country. I mean, that's the essence of the Gettysburg Address. And he was trying to reconcile. He was trying to bring everybody together. It's why he put a slaveholding Southerner, Andrew Johnson, on his ticket. And Andrew Johnson was just one very, very sleazy man. The story of the woman that he, the first woman that he bought as a slave, that he enslaved when she was 14. And just the stories around this are just, you know, just make your head explode. I mean, they're just terrible. And, you know, Lincoln thought he could pull the country together, but the Southerners, the Confederates, they have no interest in pulling the country together. They didn't then, they don't today. They're trying to tear the
Correct.
Country apart, these white supremacists.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All in the name of the lost cause, you know, this white supremacist ideology, it is absolutely terrible. So, Mark, I'm with you. Thank you very much for that call. And I really do think that these core issues, because this is what's going to come up. Judge Barrett, is it constitutional for Congress to increase the size of the court? I mean, if she says no, my jaw would drop. Is it constitutional for Congress to pass a law providing an exception to what the Supreme Court may rule on? Which is right there in Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. And if she says no again, my jaw would drop. And both of those set up a response to a 6-3 court. Ray in Lancaster, California. What's on your mind, Ray?
I'm just livid with this GOP, this hypocritical GOP. Now that there's a real possibility that the Senate could be flipped, GOP, they're worried about Democrats expanding the court. Now it's a pejorative term calling packing the court. But they're allowing this corrupt, unpopular president to pack the court with three judges. We can't fall with that. We have to be tough. I've called Kamala Harris's office twice now, just urging her and Joe not to get into the bullying. It's like a bully punching you in the nose and then telling you, "Oh, are you going to punch me back? Please don't punch me back." The GOP. Something I suggested to Kamala Harris when the GOP asked her, "Are you going to pack the court?" I'm going to simply say, don't back away from it. She and Joe should say, I'm going to hold up my oath to the American citizens and use the Constitution in any way I can to protect the health and welfare of the American citizens, unlike what you all are doing. I'm fed up with them. I'm on Facebook, and I'm encouraging people to call the senators and be tough. We cannot let fall into this game that the GOP are playing again. We got to be tough and pull the gloves off, Tom.
Yeah, this reminds me of back in the '80s when Reagan and Limbaugh made it fashionable to accuse Democrats of being liberals. And the result of that was that for the better part of 15 or 20 years, Democrats refused to call themselves liberals because they were just so afraid that the conservatives would keep pointing fingers at them. You know, hey, bring it on. Bring it on. You think you're concerned I'm going to pack the court? Damn right. If I think that's the best thing for America, for the health and welfare of this country, I will do that. I will do whatever the Constitution allows, just as you have. There you go.
Yeah,
we've got to take names and kick
part
ass.
Part of our character is... as Democrats, we're nice, and that's a good character. But there's a time where we have to look at the big picture, the long run picture. What's good for America? We've got to be stand up. We've got to stand up to the bullies. We've got to be role models and stand up to the bullies, and they'll back down. And they will be. I tell people that the same people who are calling names and beating up on the Democrats, they're going to be in line enjoying the benefits now, just like Barack's renewable energy plan. They're in line enjoying the jobs that he created. We got to be tough and look at the long run, the big picture, Tom.
Yeah, just like all those boomer Tea Partiers who were carrying signs that said, keep your government hands off my Medicare. Yeah, spot on. Ray, thanks a lot. Very, very well said. Tom in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Tom, what's up?
I'm a lifelong Democrat, or I was. Now I'm an independent. And one of the reasons I am an independent, no longer a Democrat, is because of the abortion issue. And this is a difficult issue for us all within families across the nation. Nothing simple or easy to talk about. It's tough.
So you think that police and courts should intervene in this difficult issue?
No, sir. I not at all. No. But
then what's your problem with the Democrats' position it's not the job of the police and the courts?
Well, the Democratic Party they've made it sound like it's something that's simple. That it's something that you shouldn't have concern about.
No Democrat has ever said that, Tom. No Democrat has ever said, "Oh yeah, just get an abortion." No. No, this is getting an abortion for most people is a very difficult decision. Number one. Number two, in the second or third trimester, once there's a possibility of viability of the fetus, it's damn near impossible. Last year in the United States, there were around 6,000 what are called late term abortions, third trimester abortions. Every single one of them involved a fetus that would have died on birth, was in the process of dying, was so severely malformed they could not have survived. I mean, these are god-awful, agonizing decisions. And when you insert the government into the middle of these decisions between a woman and her doctor, how would you feel, Tom, if you had to basically consult with the government before you had a vasectomy or something? I mean, actually, there's not even an analogy for this for men, because nothing that you and I do as men literally threatens our lives.
I agree with you 100% on that, Tom. But what I'm saying is the Democratic Party has talked about it as a simple issue. That's the fact of the matter.
They have not.
I think it is a
the Democratic Party has never. Tom, I'm sorry. I'm just not going to let you misrepresent this. I'm going to move along. The Democratic Party has never characterized abortion as a simple issue. Nathan in West Los Angeles. Hey, Nathan, what's up?
So I thought it was telling that Judge Barrett avoided every question posed. Her record stands for itself. Senator Feinstein and Senator Leahy both asked her about opinions that Scalia had written in the past, and Alito as well, I think. Judge Barrett had historically mentioned or written that she agreed with the dissenting opinions of those judges where the Supreme Court had either upheld or overturned something that Scalia or Alito disagreed with, Roe v. Wade being one of the major ones, and the ACA the other. And Judge Barrett talked about, you know, how she would be unbiased, avoids answering the question. And of course, a lot of the Republican senators are talking about the Ginsburg rule. I don't have as much history on the Ginsburg rule. Do you know if that was RBG as?
Yeah, it's not a rule. This is a phrase that the Republicans have invented. And, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was not the first person to come before the United States Senate and basically refused to answer any questions about how she would rule on specific cases. I mean, this goes back to the 19th century. But by calling it the Ginsburg rule, the Republicans think that they're making this all very, very palatable for the American public, who might be concerned that Amy Coney Barrett is going to come in and basically flip the entire court 180, which obviously is what's going to happen.
Did you catch Senator?
By the way, Nathan, this is the same thing that Mitch McConnell did 4 years ago when he said that the reason he was holding up the nomination of Merrick Garland was because of the Biden rule. Well, there's no such thing as a Biden rule.
Right.
Joe Biden had once back in the 80s or 90s made some offhand comment about how, you know, in nominating and doing hearings on a Supreme Court judge in the weeks before an election probably wasn't a good idea. Mitch McConnell twisted that around, turned it into a rule, and every Republican on the committee, you'll recall 4 years ago, who was questioned about why they would not hold hearings for Merrick Garland said, well, we're just following the Biden rule. You know, it was BS then, it's BS now.
Did you catch Senator Lee, right? You know, he mentioned that Judge Barrett, shoot, he had something towards the end that was very, very twisted. She had a very good answer. It was that she puts herself in the position of the person who the decision goes against or the party whom the decision goes against.
I mean, it's the same as, you know, how do you put yourself in the minds of the founders and framers? You know, it's just or the people of the time. Now they've changed originalism. It's not we're channeling James Madison. Now it's we're channeling all the people around James Madison. Barbara in Anderson, California. Hey, Barbara, what's up?
Oh, I would you know, talk a lot about abortion. And I just might like to tell the ladies out there that there may be another option for them. And it's called a tubal ligation. And what happens is that you go in the hospital for about an hour, and they fix you so that you cannot have any more children. So
right,
I
but just because a woman gets an abortion doesn't mean she never wants to have children. It may well mean
I
that
understand
this is not
that.
An appropriate time for her to have children.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, maybe another option. Because when you don't, okay. When you're through having children, you don't have to worry about it, you know?
No, I'm with you. I got a vasectomy. I mean, you know, because the deal Louise and I had was she gave birth to three children. If either one of us was going to, you know, go under the knife, it was going to be me because she'd already done her duty, as it were, or been through her pain. Craig in Half Moon Bay, California. Hey, Craig, what's up?
Always a pleasure, Tom. I have a question pursuant to the Second Amendment. Regarding well-regulated militias, which seems to be a problem. We now have militias roaming the United States who are violent. They threaten to kidnap governors. Could these people be allowed to own firearms and purchase ammunition if we have evidence that they have joined cults or a group that that propose these kinds of violent tactics, or if they attend events where they're marching with Nazi flags? Should Nazis, people who say, I'm a Nazi or I support Nazis, be allowed to own firearms and purchase ammunition? I do have a resolution, a PDF I'd like to email you and, you know, and have you look at it and maybe comment on it at a later time.
Craig, let's just be very clear. Every state in the union has a well-regulated militia. It's called the National Guard. These groups of armed, right-wing, white supremacist, racist terrorists are not militias. They call themselves militias. They are not militias. They never have been. They never will be. They don't fall under the definition of well-regulated militia in the Second Amendment. And in my opinion, they don't fall under any definition of a militia. And therefore, I don't think that we need to try to regulate them or try to legislate them or anything. We need to call them what they are, terrorist gangs. They are white supremacist terrorist gangs, period, full stop. And, you know, end of speech. Craig, thanks a lot for the call. Lauren in Seattle. Hey, Lauren, what's up?
Hi. You had the debate about the oath of office and who should give it. Calvin Coolidge, his oath of office was administered by his father. And Article 2, Section 8 of the Constitution does not specify who will administer the oath.
Thank you for that reminder, Lauren. I didn't know about Coolidge's father, but I was pretty sure that the Constitution doesn't say that has to happen that way. So thank you.
You're welcome.
This is such a privilege here, hanging out with, you know, some of the smartest people on the planet every day for 3 hours. I am in awe. Catherine in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Catherine, your thoughts?
Hi.
Hi, Tom. I am fairly concerned about the Affordable Care Act decision because, remember, Elena Kagan has to recuse because she helped work on the ACA during the Obama administration, which means we only have two liberal justices to deal with that. And the other thing I'm concerned about, if Trump starts screaming about, you know, mail-in voter fraud or whatever and tries to take this to the Supreme Court, we need to remember that Roberts and Kavanaugh are the ones who conspired. They were Bush lawyers who conspired to make this Brooks Brothers riot down in Miami in the Bush Gore thing about the hanging chads and whatever. So do you think that they should have to recuse themselves if there's, you know, a case that goes to them about the election?
Yes. And with regard to recusal, the Supreme Court is not bound by the federal code of judicial ethics that other federal courts are.
Right.
And so it's up to Elena Kagan whether she's going to recuse herself or not. It's up to I was thinking, you know, John Roberts. Yes, John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh were both, I believe, Roberts was down in Florida. I believe Kavanaugh was. Both of them have talked about, or, you know, it's on their resumes, essentially, that they worked on that case. So, you know, whether they're going to recuse themselves or not, whether we're going to see a repeat of 2000 or not, I don't know. This, you know, kind of falls into the category of we're all holding our breath to see what happens on January 20th. That's going to be the day. I mean, that's when the term expires.
Yeah.
Catherine, thank you for the call. No quick or easy answers here. We just all need to stay involved and get as many people out to vote as possible.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dan in Seattle. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind today?
Seems like Trump and the judge nominee here have communicated through some of the intermediaries like the Heritage Foundation and the Federal Society. Why aren't we talking about that? Like, why aren't we talking about the fact that she's basically communicated with them and then testifies that she hasn't?
I think because if she lies, they have no way of proving that it's a lie. And so why bother? This is true of probably all of the nominees that have come before the court, or at least all the right-wing nominees that have come before the court in recent years, given that there's this multi-hundred million dollar right-wing infrastructure that has been committed since the 70s to bringing judges onto the federal bench and has now finally achieved their goal. Point is well taken, Dan. I'm just guessing that the Democrats aren't going there because they know what the outcome will be. But, you know, well said. Michelle in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Michelle, what's on your mind?
I was calling to see what you thought about the presentation that Senator Whitehouse did on yesterday. I think it was absolutely powerful because the American people have no idea the antics, in my opinion, the corruption that the Republicans have created among the American people, among our republic.
I agree, Michelle. In fact, there's a 10-minute YouTube video of Sheldon Whitehouse doing his presentation yesterday, and I retweeted it last night saying, if you watched absolutely nothing else in yesterday's hearings, or today's hearings is when I tweeted it, you must watch this. And that's still on my Twitter timeline, or whatever they call that thing, feed or whatever. I completely agree with you. He went after it again this morning.
Now, it's a 28-minute one on there as well, on YouTube as well. It was absolutely masterful.
Okay, I will go looking for that, and I'll retweet the longer one.
I think that the American people, they don't read. They are so ill-informed until they don't understand what is at stake here.
Yeah, I'm with you, Michelle. And I would add that the reason why our media do not report on the kinds of things that Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, the Democrat from Rhode Island, was talking about yesterday, he was basically talking about how billionaires are pulling the strings for our entire judiciary so that they will get judges on the courts who will rule to help them out in everything from pollution cases to tax cases. That was what he laid out. And the reason the media doesn't talk about this is because most of our media in the United States is owned by essentially the same people. giant corporations and multimillionaires and billionaires who own them. And that's why it doesn't make it out. And God bless Sheldon Whitehouse. He actually went in and made a contribution to his, even though he's not running for election this year, it's not for another 2 years. I went to his campaign website yesterday and tossed him a small donation just by way of saying, good on you. Michelle, thank you. Tyrone in Harlem, New York. Hey, Tyrone, what's up?
Yeah, that was masterful. I was like stuck to my earphones listening to how he was breaking down the intricacies of how they knocked down the Janus case and how long it took, 6 years, before they felt that it was right to strike. But it was masterful. I'm gonna listen to it again because it's a lot of stuff. But what I was concerned about is, are people paying attention to the fact that Donald Trump told people to vote twice? He told his followers to vote twice. Right. And if they don't think that these people are not going to do it, yes, yes. And if you don't think these people are not going to do it, we got another thing coming.
I think that was outrage number 16,212, and it just kind of slipped by. Tyrone, I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they can pull it off. We've got pretty good protections against people voting twice.
We do, but it's not going to stop them from trying. And the fact that when they interviewed that lady, and they told her, if Trump tells you to wear a mask, would you wear it? Oh, yeah, I'll wear it then. Trump's telling people not to wear a mask, knowing they get all the information stating that this is what they need to do to protect themselves, and they won't do it.
That's because he's going after herd immunity. And the story in the White House is, hey, we're all going to get it eventually. And, you know, unless you're old or sick or black or Hispanic or Native American, you don't have to worry about it. So all those white people in the White House, they're just they're chilling out. Tyrone, thank you for the call. Spot on. Terry in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Terry, thanks for watching this on YouTube. What's up?
If this confirmation goes through, which it is, the whole sham of it, is it possible? What is his powers? Could he go back in and perhaps balance the court, I don't know, by executive order saying I'm going to add 6 more justices to make it 15 or, I don't know, perhaps 21? Does he have that much power? Can he do that? And then perhaps make regulations
on
him, like you have to serve for 15 years before you can even get to become a Supreme Court justice?
Those powers, Terry, are reserved to Congress. Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution says that the Supreme Court shall operate under regulations and exceptions defined by Congress. The regulations part means that Congress, the House and Senate, get to decide how many members the Supreme Court has, how long they can serve on the court, and even what kinds of cases they can decide and not decide, a power that hasn't been used in a long, long time by this Congress. In fact, it has never really been used in a consequential way. So Biden doesn't have that power, but Congress does. And that's why it's so important that we not only take the House, but the Senate, or hold the House, but take the Senate as well. Thanks a lot for the call. Jonathan, is it Wantagh, New York?
Yes, it is. How you doing, Tom? Now, I heard Ted Cruz, and he was talking about, oh, the Democrats are hypocrites, because earlier Biden said we shouldn't add any more justices. Leahy said we shouldn't. RBG said we shouldn't. But why couldn't they just own it? Why couldn't they just say it's a different time? Maybe back then it wasn't quite as partisan as it is. It was wrong then, but it's right now, is basically what I'm saying. And also, you know,
I think it was right then. What Congress did in 1863, when Abraham Lincoln said basically to Congress, because we were in the middle of the Civil War at that time, he said, I'm very concerned that this is the Supreme Court that arguably kicked off the Civil War in 1856 with the Dred Scott decision. And so Lincoln said, I'm going to add Supreme Court justice to the court. And he took the court. He didn't do it, but he requested Congress to do it. And Congress added another member to the Supreme Court. After Lincoln was assassinated, his vice president, Lincoln had this in his second term, this unity government where he'd brought a Southern slaveholding Democrat onto the ticket with him, which was a huge mistake, Andrew Johnson. And Congress said, you know, we don't want Andrew Johnson to have an opportunity to put anybody on the court. So they got together and they passed a law saying that there were only 7 members of the court. And at that moment in time, there were 9 people on the court and a 10th seat that was open. They took it down to 7. That didn't mean they kicked anybody off the court, but if anybody had died, they wouldn't have been replaced. And then when Andrew Johnson was safely out of office and Ulysses Grant was in charge, then the Republicans said, okay, we're going to take the court, we're going to expand it again from 7, this time up until 9. And that's where it stayed until now. But they did it because of concerns about basically Southern conservatives. And frankly, that's where we are today. I mean, the party names have changed, but it's Southern conservatives once again. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. Tom, listening to KTRC in Santa Fe. Hey, Tom, you're on the air. What's up?
I'm not a Democrat, but I listen to your show quite often, and we disagree on things, but that's one of the great privileges of living in this country. But I do agree with Senator Whitehouse questioning. Dark money does have an influence in politics and played a large role in the judge's nomination to the Supreme Court. There's no doubt about that. I believe that Judge Barrett definitely knew President Trump's attempt to do away with the Affordable Care Act way before January of 2017, excuse me. And, you know, it's disappointing to know that, but I agree with Senator Klobuchar on following the tracks. Those are things that I agree with. And I just wanted you to know I love listening to your show, and I'll continue to do so.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thanks. It's nice to hear reasonable conversation from dissenting voices. And by the way, feel free to call in and challenge me on any topic you want. I love those kind of conversations. And you know, unless the person on the other side gets abusive, I try to be very, very reasonable.
Oh, yeah.
Tom, thank you
Definitely.
For your call.
Yes.
Good talking with you. Thank you. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
I've been wondering about the process for adding justice to the court. I assume that you need a two-thirds majority in both houses, at least. Or is it treated sort of like as house cleaning kind of a thing, you know?
There's no stipulation in the Constitution for anything other than the legislature can, Congress can regulate the court. It's Article 3, Section 2. You can read it. It's very short. It's very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And so Congress then makes their own rules, and those rules get recertified every 2 years when a new Congress comes in. And so things like the filibuster, which requires right now 60 votes, there was a time when it required 66 votes, or a two-thirds majority anyway. But that's up to the body itself. So if the Democrats come in and take the Senate, and if they blow up the filibuster, which there's a broad, I think, consensus among Democrats needs to be done, then they can pass anything with a simple majority, including expanding the Supreme Court. It simply requires that both the House and the Senate pass it with a majority vote and that it be signed by the president. That's all. It's just a simple piece of legislation changing the number of people on the court. It's been done, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 times since the founding of the Republic.
It sounds too easy for such a difficult thing. Plus, they should put a rule in the Senate that you need a 60-vote majority for Supreme Court justices. That's my feeling.
Well, we had that right up until Mitch McConnell blew it up. There was a filibuster provision for Supreme Court justices, and in order to get Brett Kavanaugh in, Mitch McConnell had the Senate change its own rules. And so it's simple majority now for Supreme Court people, but again, those are Senate rules. Those are not constitutional requirements. But you know, it has happened multiple times. I mean, you know, when Abe Lincoln was assassinated and Andrew Johnson became president, Lincoln was an anti-slavery Republican. Andrew Johnson was a pro-slavery, slave-owning Democrat, and there was an opening on the Supreme Court. And the Republicans controlled the House and Senate at that time because they had just won the Civil War, and half the southern states, which were the Democratic bastion, literally did not have representation in Congress. So Congress got together and said, we're going to reduce the size of the Supreme Court down to, as I recall, it was from 10 down to 7. I could be wrong on that. But they reduced it by 2 or 3 in order to prevent Andrew Johnson from appointing anybody to the Supreme Court. And then after Johnson left his term of office in, 1868, I think, and Ulysses S. Grant came in and became president, a good, you know, safe Republican, then Congress met again and raised it back up to 9. I think it went from 10 to 7 to 9 during that period of time. There was a similar thing that happened in the election of 1800. Thomas Jefferson beat John Adams in November of 1800, but he didn't take office until March of 1801. And so during that 5-month period, John Adams passed a law reducing the number of members of the Supreme Court by 1 so that the incoming President Jefferson wouldn't be able to appoint anybody. Jefferson came in along with his Democratic Republicans, which is now what we call the Democratic Party, and passed another law that increased the size of the Supreme Court by 2. It's not like it hasn't happened before. It's just the last time it happened was when Ulysses Grant did it right after, you know, after Andrew Johnson left. But it's pretty straightforward process. Donovan in Redway, California. Hey, Donovan, what's on your mind?
The idea that the people should have a say in who the Supreme Court nominee is. And rather than some idea, this would probably take, you would probably know this, a constitutional amendment of some kind. But rather than having the Senate confirm the Supreme Court nominee, the president nominates, or the Congress, which is all of Congress, the representatives and the senators, second the nomination, and then we organize a national vote, up or down, on this person, so that the people actually have a say. And we can be like, no, we don't like them. They're not who we want. Choose somebody else. What do you think of that?
I respectfully disagree. Number one, it would require a modification of the Constitution, so it's not going to happen. But more importantly is the concept. The idea of the courts was that they would be nonpartisan, they would be nonpolitical, they wouldn't be beholden to popular opinion. So popular opinion, for example, was, yeah, we've got to have, you know, separate but equal or slavery or whatever. The court wouldn't necessarily go along with that. The court would be an impartial arbiter, as it were. Now, it hasn't always worked out that way. In fact, it hasn't even usually worked out that way. But the moment that you put Supreme Court justices up for essentially election, and this is why I oppose judicial elections in general, what you're doing is throwing judges into the political scrum, you know, into the political debate. And I think that that's a bad idea, because then they'll be inclined to make promises and cut deals and find supporters. And you know, politics gets very, very ugly. I think that the court should be apolitical. And I think that when Mitch McConnell used this as an excuse, And I'm disappointed, frankly, that the Democrats are simply quoting McConnell's excuse. Instead, they should be saying, you know, you kept us from having our nominee last time. We are going to keep you from having your nominee this time. It's just fair. And once it's done, it's done. That is what, in my opinion, Biden and Harris should be saying. But what they're saying, they're basically quoting Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell invented this thing. He called it the Biden rule because of some offhand remark Joe Biden had made years ago. But, you know, they're referring to it that way. And, you know, which I think is just a mistake. I think that, you know, what we need to have are Supreme Court justices and judges at all levels that come out of the law. If we're going to listen to anybody with regard to this, it should be the American Bar Association. The American Bar Association has fairly objective criteria to rank the qualifications of judges. Amy Coney Barrett has been a judge for only 2 years, maybe 3, but I believe it's 2 years. In fact, Barack Obama had nominated an African-American woman for the Seventh Circuit that Barrett sits on right now. Had nominated an African-American woman, and Mitch McConnell blocked that nomination for I believe, a little over a year, and left that seat open, specifically so that Amy Barrett could have that seat. So now you've got the nominee for the Supreme Court is sitting on a stolen seat, Circuit Court, and then she's going to occupy a stolen seat on the Supreme Court. I think it's crazy. Carl in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Hey, Carl, what's up?
I was wondering if you can pack a court
can you demote a judge in the Supreme Court to another federal court lower down?
Yes, you can. And this is the essence of Elizabeth Warren's proposal for term limits in the Supreme Court. The Constitution says that all federal judges have lifetime tenure. It does not say that only Supreme Court justices do. And it doesn't talk at all about moving people between courts. So Congress, Article 3, Section 2, Congress can regulate the Supreme Court. In fact, it must regulate the Supreme Court. Congress literally created the Supreme Court in its current form, decided how many members were on it, decided where they meet, defines its budget and everything else. So Congress can say, you know, after 18 years on the court or 15 years on the court, you get to go back to being a member of the Fourth Circuit or the Seventh Circuit or whatever it may be. So, yes, absolutely. Mike in La Center, Washington. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
I heard an interview on Useful Idiots the other day. They were interviewing Samuel Moyne about the Supreme Court. He wrote an article in Dissent magazine that the court is not your friend. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions on how we can rein in the power of the Supreme Court, because I don't think we have the political will to pack the court in this country. Right. And I know you wrote a book on it, and that I was just hoping that you could share with us some of the most important points you think that could affect that change. And also, how do we go against the Republican propaganda? Do we have to just keep repeating these points?
The Republican propaganda, you know, we just need to keep telling the truth. With regard to the court, number one, I do think we need to expand the size of the court. Number two, it is possible, and I talk about this at length. In fact, I learned this from John Roberts, and the current Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, that it is possible for Congress to pass legislation that says the court can't rule on this. You know, this is the law, we're making the law, period. Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. I think Congress needs to seriously consider this court-stripping legislation. And there needs to be some serious challenges to judicial review. The court has way too much power. I absolutely agree with this. And that power, by the way, that the court has, that way too much power, was not given to it by Congress or the Constitution. It was taken by the court itself onto itself in 1803. Sheldon Whitehouse was absolutely the most critical, the most important, the most vital, the most shocking that I've seen so far. A couple of weeks ago, Sheldon Whitehouse made an oblique comment in an interview on CNN or MSNBC. I happened to catch it. And in fact, Sean reached out to Senator Whitehouse's office and asked if he'd be willing to come on our program and discuss it. And basically, they were like, we're holding this back right now. But basically, what he said on television was, there is a conspiracy of great money to basically hijack this country, to hijack the democratic process. And he just laid this out. Sheldon Whitehouse, the Democrat from Rhode Island, one of the absolute most, you know, brilliant, and not just intellectually, but he knows how to make a presentation. He knows how to build a case. One of the most brilliant senators on this panel, you know, just laid it out. There is a group of right-wing billionaires and foundations associated with them. They have created a blind trust or a front organization that they route their money through, called Donors Trust, that is constructed in such a way that we never learn who it is who actually gave them money. Over $250 million have flowed through this channel, and the money is, we don't know where it's coming from. The Washington Post, I believe, perhaps it was the New York Times, had a front page story about Charles Koch is finally getting the Supreme Court he wants. Charles Koch, one of the richest men in America. He's worth probably close to $100 billion and has been funding right-wing causes since the 60s, as far as we can tell. And certainly his daddy was before that with the John Birch Society. That $250 million has flowed into these various organizations. And one of these organizations, the Federalist Society and Leonard Leo, have been huge recipients, tens of millions of dollars of this money. And they have been picking and nurturing hardcore right-wing judges literally out of college, out of law school, and training them up in the way of becoming a hardcore right-wing judge and getting them appointments on the bench. Amy Coney Barrett had just been a lawyer who was signing full-page newspaper ads to end abortion and respect life from fertilization forward, which basically means, in their minds, they're opposed to the birth control pill, even though, you know, the birth control pill typically interrupts the cycle before fertilization occurs. You know, they've got this extensive mythology about that, you know, has resulted in anti-birth control legislation being proposed by these same people, by Republicans, you know, largely being influenced by either Catholics or evangelical Protestants, who have bought this idea that at the moment of conception, that's when God decides that life is going to happen. And he just laid this all out, that all this money is coming from these dark interests, and part of this money is to continue the process. It's to support the Citizens United decision that made all this dark money possible, that blew up all the good government laws that we had after the Nixon bribery scandals, many of which were passed during the Republican Gerry Ford presidency in 1974. So, you know, here we are, and then 5 and 6. Right up to the Buckley decision in 76. I was surprised, frankly, he didn't mention Buckley, but, you know, hey, I'm a Supreme Court wonk. But he did this absolutely brilliant job of laying this out, of just putting it right out there and saying, here's what's going on. This is what Hillary Clinton referred to 20 years ago as the vast right-wing conspiracy. You've got a bunch of right-wing billionaires. These are the people that Franklin Roosevelt took down. He called them the economic royalists. He said, they hate me and I welcome their hatred. He challenged them on every front. He beat them so badly that they stopped engaging in politics right up until 1971, when Lewis Powell wrote his infamous memo. The next year, Richard Nixon put him on the Supreme Court. And within 4 years in the Buckley decision, he was saying, oh, it's fine if billionaires own politicians. That's called free speech. So Sheldon Whitehouse laid all this out and basically said, what we're watching here is a conspiracy to pack the courts with hardcore right-wingers who don't believe in democracy, don't believe that the government has any kind of protective function with regard to the people, and don't believe that the people have rights unless the government says they have rights. For example, the right to an abortion. Or the right to get married if you're not, you know, a straight cis person. This is what Sheldon Whitehouse laid out, and he pointed out there have been 80 5-4 decisions where the court has ruled against we the people in every single one of these 80 decisions, and every single one of them was 5-4 Republicans versus Democratic appointees, every single one of them, and every single one of them had been heavily supported. In fact, the cases have been brought before the court by this $250 million dark money machine. What do we do in a world where there's no Roe v. Wade and where the Affordable Care Act has been struck down and where the Supreme Court starts striking down all kinds of laws that protect the rights of workers and your right not to be polluted and any kind of legislation that might restrain the actions of billionaires? Check iwillvote.com. Tag your
it. Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.